Your reasons for listening to this show, well, those are your own. But just keep in mind that the views, information, or opinions expressed on the Tuttle Daily Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Yeah, it's called free speech, people.
Nobody's forcing you to listen.
Get ready for your daily dose of Tuttle.
I know this is going to be a little light at the beginning.
Slash producer we've ever had, of course, Tuttle in Florida.
From the Hobo Fish Camp, it's the Tuttle Daily Podcast.
No wonder nobody likes you, Tuttle. Everything's a goddamn debate.
All right, guys, greetings and welcome to another edition of the Tuttle Daily Podcast. I know a lot of people are like, oh, part-time Pat showed up to do a show today. And I'm going to be upfront and honest. I have been extremely busy making some really good money right now, working my way up the ladder, corporate Pat. I'm becoming corporate Pat now. But, like, I've been staying extremely busy. So, welcome to the Tuttle Daily Podcast. If you're watching it right now, you're new to it. Matter of fact, I still got shows, audio versions of the Tuttle Daily Podcast that I need to upload to iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify. I need to do that, but right now, I've talked about this, guys. I've talked about this, how consistency is important when you are a content creator on any social media platform, internet, whatever it may be, consistency. And right now is what I'm trying to tell. This is proof right here that consistency is something you have to have. You gotta have to be successful as a content creator. Once again, like I said, I know that I've been slacking. And if any of you guys would like to call in, if you would like to call in and bust my balls a little bit and kind of like, you know, bust my balls, I would love it because it is well deserved. It is. I don't want any of you guys to think that I don't care about this anymore. What up, Iggy T? How are you, Iggy T? But Iggy, you're just getting in. What I'm trying to say, though, is that I know that I've been slacking a little bit, but I'm just trying to balance out the time. I'm making some really good money. I personally have not been this least stressed out in my life in a long time because guess what? I'm getting paid. I'm getting money. I don't want anybody to think like I'm flossing or anything, trying to say that I don't worry about things. Yeah, I do, but like I don't have to worry about things as much as I used to have to because, and that was a weird word, used to have to's. What I'm trying to say though is that I'm trying to concentrate, be more responsible. Be more responsible in my life, people, because let's be honest, I always put radio and broadcasting in front of everything that I've ever done in my life. I have. I really, really have. And for the first time, I'm putting other things in front of it. I apologize. I know that I probably sound like some hipster geek ass bitch right now, but I mean, here, this is all right. So making all this, and I've been doing a lot of cooking and experimenting with food, but I made, this is how much of a hipster bitch I've become. Guys, I made avocado toast with roasted tomatoes, no matter, like, I don't know, for the British people that are listening to the show right now, tomatoes or tomatoes. But I did. I made avocado toast today with roasted tomatoes on top of it, with balsamic vinegar glaze. I didn't even know that was a thing until recently. I did. I bought balsamic vinegar glaze today. Never in a million years would I have ever thought that I was like, oh yeah, guess what, guys? This is a big oxymoron, by the way. I went to Winn-Dixie and I bought balsamic vinegar glaze for my avocado toast. By the way, the toast was sourdough bread. I even put some rosemary and bay leaf while it was roasting the tomatoes and stuff, people. So, yeah, I probably sound like a little bit of a bitch because I made avocado toast with roasted tomatoes and a balsamic vinegar glaze. Seriously. I mean, at least I bought it at Winn-Dixie. At least I didn't buy it at like a Fresh Market or a Whole Foods or something. Yeah, no, there would have been no man. Yeah, it is a little sus, Vulture. It is. So I did that. I made that for breakfast. My mom loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Loved it. I think the next time that I do it, because I made like little mini hors d'oeuvres. I know I just adores. How do you say adore? Like, you know, little mini food that you, is that adore or adores? Adores? I know that it sounds weird when I'm trying to say it. Or d'oeuvres? Adores? Or adores? I'm just trying to, because it sounds weird when I try to say fancy words and stuff. But it was like on little mini type sourdough toasted bread that I put the avocado and the roasted tomatoes and the balsamic vinegar on top of that. Once again, what the hell happened in my life that this is what I'm talking about right now? Seriously. All right, so, Vulture, would you like me to tell Miss Sally that you're making fun of me for trying to do something good for his mom, trying to make her feel like a little, you know, special? Is that what you're trying to say, Vulture? Or are you trying? By the way, Vulture is my producer. And he does call my mom Miss Sally. So, all right. Guess what, Vulture? I'm going to tell Miss Sally that, oh, I can't make you avocado toast anymore. So if she calls you and is like, hey, Vulture, why am I not getting my avocado toast with roasted tomatoes and balsamic vinegar? Is it because you made fun of Tuttle while he was talking about how he did something nice for his mom and stuff? No, you know what, Vulture? That's on you, man. That is completely on you. I needed to fix my hair. It just looked too, like, looked too proper. How's this? We'll go with that right now. I got a guest coming up at 7:15. I got Andy Fry. Andy Fry, he is a Chicago-based sports writer. Forbes, ESPN, ESPN, and Rolling Stone. And the author of a time travel novel called 90 Days in the 90s. I'm very, very interested in speaking with him about, you know, he was a sports writer in Chicago. I've been to Chicago. Matter of fact, the first plane flight that I ever took in my life was to Chicago, Chicago O'Hare. And I got to tell you, it was not the best experience in the world. I'm not talking about when I was there in the city of Chicago. I was just talking about the flight. It was so bad, people. Like, it was extremely bad. So I'm going to be talking to Andy. Because I got a lot of, you know, him being a sports writer in Chicago. One of, you know, see, I don't want to. I will say this. I won't talk about it. I've talked about this on the show before. But you would think that most Southern men, like myself, but I'm not like most Southern men. What I'm trying to say, though, is you would think that one of the most important sports moments that you've ever experienced live, I'm not talking about live in person, I'm talking about live, watching it from beginning to end on TV. And I want to talk to Andy Fry about this moment, because I had that moment with my mom. A lot of people would think, I'm really starting to see a trend here, that a lot of people are, no wonder, I'm single still and everything. But what I'm trying to say, though, is like, I've had great sports moments with my dad. I will say the biggest sports moment, watching it on TV with my parents and stuff, is definitely with my dad watching the Florida Gators beat the Seminoles in the national championship game. Man, nothing will ever compare to that. What up, Granny Loves Getting Banned? How are you, buddy? So what I'm trying to say, though, is that, and if any of you guys have any guesses in the chat room, if you know what I'm talking about, if you know what I'm talking about, it was a sports moment that I watched live with my mom, and it is a sports moment that is involved with Chicago, the city of Chicago. I would like to see, I think some people might know what that moment, Chicago sports history. And no. Nope. I mean, a great guess, Granny Loves Getting Banned. Granny Loves Getting Banned. White Sox World Series. I mean, big, but I didn't watch it live. I didn't watch it live with my mom. But it was an amazing moment. And I remember every, isn't it funny how things get into your mind and how you will always get brought back to that moment? I remember everything. I remember how the light looked coming through the window of my parents' double-wide trailer. I remember what the air felt like. I know exactly why I was able to watch that game that day. And it was on a school day. It was a school day, but it was also a half day. So obviously, Granny Loves Getting Banned. I will give you a hint. Granny Loves Getting Banned is in the right sport. Is in the right sport. So if that happens, if that helps out at all. Miss LMT, that's awesome that you're close with your mom. A lot of women would find that adorable. Well, I mean, Miss LMT, you would think that. You would absolutely think that, but no. Nah, it doesn't. It really doesn't happen. Okay. I'll get even closer. Granny Loves Getting Banned. So, Cubs. So you guess White Sox. I said right sport. Then you guess the Cubs. So I will say this, right sport, right team, but not the Cubs World Series win. Nah, it's not. Yeah, I mean, Vulture to Cubs World Series. Yes, great sports moments, but once again, did not watch that live. I tried to tell you guys that it was on a school day. It was on a school day. It was a half day. I was home by 1 o'clock. I was home by 1 o'clock. So obviously you guys have got to understand that it was most likely a regular season game because you're not going to play the World Series on a regular school day. No, during the day, no, it's just not happening. Here, hold on. My hair is just out of control, so I'm just going to give up. It was... okay, here, how about this? Granny, if I'm being honest, Granny loves anal. Granny loves getting banned. Granny loves getting banned is like the closest. Like, he eliminates a lot of things. Granny loves getting banned said White Sox. Then I said right sport. And then he said Cubs winning World Series. I said right team. Then Granny loves getting banned said had to be a perfect game. Okay, so Granny loves getting banned is, you know, kind of getting close, so I'll give it. It was a pitching performance, but not a perfect game, not a no-hitter. It was a pitching performance. So, I don't know. If any of you guys can name the player that, or name the pitcher that was on the cup. Oh, I got Andy Fry on. Here, hold on. So, I'm not going to. What up, Andy? How are you?
Good, how you doing?
All right. So, were you watching any of the show before you logged on or no?
No, I was a little slow to the beat technology-wise. But
hey, Andy, how are you, man?
Good, how you doing?
All right, before I'll get right into the question, okay? But before we get into the question, because I've been talking, you were a Chicago sports writer, still are. You still probably do that stuff. I was talking about one of the most... I wasn't there live, but I watched it live on TV. Does it mean more if you watch something from beginning to end in person, not in person, but live on TV? You didn't like watch it after it happened. Does it mean a little bit more to people, you think?
I think it does. Cause I mean, to get to an example that you may be hinting towards, I missed the first run of Michael Jordan, the Bulls in the 90s. Cause I moved here in Chicago in 1994, but I definitely got to see and participate in the second three championships. And what I can tell you was,
so 72 wins. You're talking 72 win Bulls, right? In
97, 98. It was on TV and you could watch it on TV in Idaho or Utah or Australia. We did that too, but you know, at least three times a week, everybody stopped what they were doing to tune into the Bulls, at least most people that we knew. And we would have conversations the next day with, I worked at technology at the time, kind of a help desk job. And I would go, you know, talk to like grandmas and, you know, single mothers and then, you know, dads with, you know, five kids in sports and people play basketball, people who never picked up a basketball ever. And they all felt like it was an experience that they were participating in, you know, watching the Bulls back from, you know, 15 points down with 2 minutes in Jordan and the gang pulling it off. And they did that all the time. And, you know, it was definitely an experience. It wasn't just us being spectators. And I think it you know, when Derrick Rose was with the Bulls, let's say about 10 years ago, and they were starting to get really good again, you could kind of feel that building up. And it was kind of more of a diehard basketball crowd that followed more closely then. But yeah, there's a sense of community, I think, in sports.
But what about that moment, though? I'm talking about one singular game, and nobody has been able to guess it in the chat room. But It was. Okay, so growing up, and I'm born and raised in Florida, but the only national teams we could get, like, I grew up a Braves fan. The only reason I grew up a Braves fan in the 90s was because the games were on TBS and the Ted Turner Network. But then I also was a Cubs fan because WGN, like, in the 90s and stuff. And I watched a lot of Cubs games, especially on half days down here in school. And I happened to get off on a day. It was a half day. I was able to catch the afternoon game where Kerry Wood had 20 plus strikeouts against the Houston Astros. And I watched that from beginning to end. And I can remember every feeling I had watching that.
Yeah, so I think that you're getting at it. I mean, I guess I was thinking more in the macro in terms of experiencing a full season.
Yeah, I get what you're saying because I was a Magic fan, and the Bulls, right after that, first Michael Jordan coming back, they absolutely owned it after that.
Yeah, and you guys had Shaq. Maybe you didn't really know what to do with Shaq. And Penny Hardaway couldn't stay fit. But, I think about, like, but there was, like, I was not at the Bartman game in, 2003, when we were five outs from the World Series. But I know that story back and forth. And maybe it's because I'm a writer and I've written about it a little bit. But I it's kind of, like, built into the culture of Chicago Cubs fans. Like, so my son wasn't even alive then. He's 16 now. He understands the weight of that. And so when the Cubs won the World Series in 2016, I had to go out of town the next day to cover a sports championship in a different city. I actually rebooked my flight. Actually, I postponed my flight a day because it was game six became game seven, and I wasn't going to miss game seven by being in the air. So he went to he skipped school with all his friends at my wife's, she allowed him to do that. And so he was 10 at the time. He experienced that championship parade, and I think it's going to live with him for the rest of his life. But he watched every game with us. I don't know if he remembers every game, but I think when you maybe it depends on how diehard of a sports fan you are in general or of a team, but there's more buy-in, I think, when you're motivated to watch it live and something special happens while you're watching.
Andy, I want to get into what you're coming on my show, and thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
90 days in the 90s. So are you a Gen Xer?
Yeah, definitely. I was born in 72. I was in college, and I started college in 1991. So it was kind of my book is largely about music and the music scene, but there's all kinds of pieces of pop culture. The 90s, as you could probably guess. Mm-hmm. So I was back dab in the middle of that. And
I was one of the last years in the Gen X. I was born in 79, but it was at the tail end of 79. I was born November 24th, 1979. So, like, I think, like, right up to the 80s, right, was the Gen X?
Yeah, they say 1965 to 1980. I tend to think of, like, generations in terms of things that happen. So, I mean, I'm no sociologist, but what I've written about Cubs fans in different generations. So to give you an example, like 65 to 80, there's kind of, we talk about millennials a lot, and millennials are generally people who grew up in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. I kind of think that you could divide them up, like people who are probably born between when Reagan was inaugurated and the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, I kind of consider Generation Y. And then there's some overlap of millennials because, like, my friends who maybe were born in 1980, 81, they didn't really grow up in the 2000s, but they're definitely younger than me, and they experienced different music in high school and different movies. And, they kind of missed the whole John Hughes movie thing, and they have a set of movies that they follow as a part of their cultural centerpiece. So Generation X, generally, like they say, 65 to 80, but there's different gradients. Like, some of the early Generation X author books were Bright Lights, Big City, and Generation X, the book by Douglas Copeland, which I think takes place in, I think it came out in like 91 or 92. So it probably takes place in about 89 or 80, which that's slightly different from, that's kind of like my old, if I had an older brother or sister and they had friends who were two or three years older, that's like, that's out of a different angle or edge of the generation. So, you know, I guess I don't think of Gen X as like, we weren't living in New York City in 1987 partying and doing blow or whatever happens in Bright Lights, Big City and some of those other novels. You know, we were like broken eating ramen noodles and listening to Nirvana in the early 90s and kind of thinking that was cool and not really caring about, you know, we're, I guess we're, I like to joke that we're overly obsessive with authenticity, maybe to the point that it's a fault. All generations have like music and pop culture pieces of it, but we also have kind of characteristics that could define us, I suppose. Yeah. So,
Andy, so, all right. So people from the, they always are going to think that their generation had the best music. Your book, you said 90 Days in the 90s. So two-part question. I want to hear, you know, some of the premise. I don't want you to give away anything or stuff like that. Yeah. But you said music is involved in it. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that the 90s music, per se, if you look at it across the board, growing up in Florida, country music. I know, like, a lot of people don't like country music, but the music that you had, country music you had in the 90s was the best in my opinion. You in rock, you had this shift from, you know, hair metal, glam bands and stuff to talking about real life stuff and rock music and everything. But then, like, even top 40 and hip hop, they all had stories no matter what. I think what separates the 90s music from the rest of the generation, we told real stories, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's so. I think so. It wasn't like a complete switch just happened one day, because before Nirvana became the biggest band in the world in 91, like, I would listen to radio and I would turn off the radio station that was playing like Bon Jovi and Debbie Gibson and the New Kids on the Block. And there was like The Cure was getting radio airplay, the Pixies, Living Color for a while was the biggest rock band, hard rock band in the world in like 89, 90. Jane's Addiction was just starting out and starting Lollapalooza. So I think that there was overall, the main thing is that there was an emphasis on the artist versus what the corporation wants the artist to be. And, you know, there were some really great breakthrough artists in the 80s that showed us all their talent, whether you're talking about like Prince or Madonna or Springsteen or like kind of the second wave of David Bowie. So I don't discount country music in that we went from like, and I'm not knocking any of these bands, but like Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers and Alabama and kind of like, you know, a different version of, you know, big hall country kind of stuff that you would see in the Grand Ole Opry, which is an experience on its own, to kind of more like an iconic singer songwriter. Like in hip hop, yeah, we had Biggie and Tupac Shakur. In country music, you had Garth Brooks, whether you like it or not, Faith Hill, Shania Twain was like the biggest one ever. Leanne Rimes, you know, she wasn't just this teeny bopper thing that came and went away. She was kind of like the first, I guess, version or avatar of
classic country
ended up doing. So there was authenticity. I don't really like, I like old country. I don't like a lot of pop country, and I know people who do love it, but there was definitely more credence putting around the singer songwriter. And let's see what Shania, what story she's telling and what she's singing about. And it's not just about breakups and falling in love and, you know, chasing a boy. It was more of, like you're saying, a more of a broad experience and more broad storytelling. And I don't know what it was that caused all that, other than maybe music fans and some of the industry getting kind of sick of hearing the same old things. And, you know, hard rock was chicks and beer and hairspray, and radio pop was all love songs and, you know, baby, 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 I want you back. There was obviously there's more to music than that. And we kind of got our heads together and figured that out starting with the 90s. And it really blossomed through all genres of music, I think.
So in the book, so 90 Days in the 90s, when I was reading the profile, it's a little bit of a time travel type thing. Because I really don't, I mean, everybody, when they think of time travel movies, they think of Back to the Future, but they never, like, I always wanted, I watching or seeing Back to the Future, I was like, what if they moved that up a couple of decades? You see what I'm saying? How much different would it be? Because it, look at that 70s show. Now they're doing that 90s show. So, like, is it weird to see that the 90s are getting compared to what the 70s were at all?
I don't know. It's weird because I had this thought a couple of weeks ago. Like, I love the movie Days Confused, which is about the 70s. It takes place on the last day of school in 1976. But I think it was a pinnacle 90s movie, in part because I could talk all day about this. But, like, it's one of those movies in the 90s where you feel like you're with the characters for the span of the movie. Like, Pulp Fiction did that. Friday did that. There's a whole bunch of them. So I don't think of it as a 70s movie. So I had this weird thought, I think, when I saw it, like, for the 55th time about 2 weeks ago. I was flying back from LA and I was just like, I love this movie, so I'm going to watch it. I thought, you know, there really needs to be a now reboot and they need to do Days Confused, but it happens in the 90s. And it's like the same look and feel. And obviously the cars are different. The music that they're listening to is different, but I feel like kind of the attitude and the approach would be the same.
It would be.
It's got to be the same look and feel or it wouldn't work.
Andy, I think it could still have that feel because the 90s kids were the last generation where unless you were absolutely stupid, you would never get caught doing anything badly because you didn't have a cell phone. Not a lot of people had a lot of cell phones where they could call and check on you or whatever. We had beepers, but like I could call from a payphone and say that I was at somebody's house or something because not a lot of people had caller ID and stuff. So I still think you could do a Dazed and Confused type movie, but in the 90s very easily.
Yeah, so in my movie, or sorry, my book, which I think of like in terms of like a movie because that's a generational thing. In my book, there's only I think one or two characters that have cell phones and they barely use them because Darby she's a record store owner. It's about now. She takes over her uncle, her favorite uncle dies and she kind of feels bad that she lost touch with him. And the one thing they had in common was music. So she takes over the record store, hears about this time travel train called the Gray Line, which if you're looking right now at this, you see the cover behind me, and there's a train on the cover of the book, and that's the Gray Line. So she takes it back to kind of the day that she left Chicago the first time in 1996. Goes back the same day that she actually technically left the first time and moved away. So, I didn't have a cell phone in 1996. I knew, like, a couple people who were maybe a couple years older than me who were, you know, were lawyers just out of law school. They had kind of an image thing or maybe were a little douchey, and they felt like they needed this brick size thing to be carrying around in the bar, which they couldn't hear because, you know, they weren't that good back then. So it was, it's kind of a different time. Like, you know, we would still send faxes and we'd still call each other up and talk on the phone versus just text. And I remember there's a scene in the book, which is based on something that happened in real life where we're on a CTA bus, like a Chicago City bus. And there's these girls who are younger than us and they're like punk or goth or whatever. And they get in kind of an argument because one has a cell phone. And the other punk girls think it's not punk or cool to have a cell phone.
Yeah, of course.
We had those conversations in the 90s. You would never not have a cell phone now because you thought, well, I'm a little rugged. It doesn't really fit my rep. And so I'm going to opt out. You wouldn't do that now. But back then in the 90s, you know, you could do that. You would never. I mean, I guess I wonder how important it was in hip hop culture to have a beeper. If you're like an up and coming rapper, like probably you needed to have one.
Oh, yeah, of course. I even had one. I would say 97, 98. Yeah. But like, I mean, even when I got my first cell phone, like when I was still going to college and stuff, like I had to be careful about who I called. And I had a list of people that I didn't use up my minutes on or whatever. Right. You know, it was really, really weird.
Yeah. It's just what, 10, 12 years ago that, I think it was T-Mobile had their, you could have your five.
Yeah.
The commercial with Charles Barkley where like, I think Dwayne Wade or somebody wanted to be in his five and then realized it kind of sucked to be constantly at.
Well, it was like MySpace back in the day though, too. You know, you had MySpace and everybody would get all like butthurt if you weren't in their top friends list.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of missed MySpace and my generation, but I guess people in my rung of Generation X, we kind of came to in 2009 and got on Facebook because we thought we should maybe as a business move, and then some people are addicted to it, some aren't. Some of us have kind of got off it because we realized it's is it It can be as annoying as a beeper can be. So.
Oh, yeah. You always feel like you got to reply, and if you don't, like, see, that's the thing about it is, like, you know, because I've worked in radio the past 20 years and stuff, and it was like, back in the day, you didn't even know what your favorite radio person even looked like or whatever, you know? And now it's like, the only reason I'm even on social media is because I'm a content creator and I do radio and stuff. It's like, I really don't like it, but it's kind of, you know, future employers or potential employers look at that type of stuff.
Yeah. So back when we were in the 90s, we were in our 20s and we were aspiring music writers who I never knew that I would write for Rolling Stone. I kind of wrote more about things that weren't music than music for Rolling Stone when I was there for 2 years. You know, we had these things called zines, like we would publish our own black and white, you know, magazines that we would review bands or review albums. And that was fun. It was very liberating. It was basically like a analog paper blog. It was basically the same thing, except we wouldn't update it every day or every week because you had to pay to print it. And that was just like what you did if you were kind of in the indie scene of music. And I did a little bit of that. It ends up being in my book not because I forced it in, but, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that we did back then. Like you would go to Tower Records and look at all the magazines for an hour and, you know, buy a CD that you already had on tape that you didn't need. And there was really a participation in the music world, just like we were talking about a couple minutes ago with sports fandom, that you really felt like it was an experience that you had to check into to get something out of versus just checking your phone to see if anything important happened in the world that you're not really connected to.
I remember back, you know what? I know this is going to make me sound like, you know, it's funny when we were young and stuff, we were like, man, if I ever sound like that old man, I'm going to kick my own ass, you know, or something like that. But yeah. I remember going to the gas station to get the paper to look and see if your baseball team won the night before and how many games behind they are and stuff. Like, I know that makes me sound real old and everything, but I actually liked that back in the day.
Yeah, well, it's so if I decided that just because I'm curious, I wanted to know what Johnny Cash's birthday was. Like we were talking about in the 80s, early 90s, I guess you'd have to go to the library and hope that they had a book, or you'd pick up, I guess, the encyclopedia and look up Johnny Cash. Or now I could just go down to the kitchen. I could say, hey, Alexa, when was Johnny Cash born? Or I actually have this $1 option I added where I could say, hey, Alexa, ask Sam when Johnny Cash was born. And then Samuel Jackson's voice will come on. It's definitely worth the dollar. And then, If you get him to sing happy birthday, he drops a couple F-bombs, a couple MF-bombs.
Yes.
So that part is cool. But at the same time, I think I'm pretty good about not getting too caught up in all the spoils of technology, but using, like, I know that my kid's at his girlfriend's house right now. I kind of wanted to know when he's going to be home for dinner. It's nice that I can not wonder where the hell he is when I want to know or that. But at the same time, I try not to be too obtrusive and, you know, open his DMs or whatever. So I think you got to set your limits and there's a balance. And I think with age and experience, maybe, and just kind of paying attention to what's going on in the world, you realize that you don't have to be all places, all times, just because technology can avail that to you.
Yeah. On the line with me right now is Andy Fry, the author of the book, 90 Days in the 90s. Andy, where can people find the book at and if they want to buy it?
Yeah, you can definitely find it on Amazon or wherever you buy books. I always encourage people that if you've got a local bookstore that, you know,
independent, a small bookstore,
they may not have it in stock, but you could order it and they can get it, you know, in a couple of days and throw the business that way to keep your local bookstore open. Or if you want to go to 90daysin90s.com, I'll sign you a copy. It's actually direct from me. I can send you some swag too. And, you know, if you got a music, like a music nut uncle that you got to buy for Christmas or any of the holidays, you know, I could sign it out to them. And
books on tape. You ever going to do the book on audio version? And if you did, are you going to read it yourself?
I'm not opposed to it. I had someone kind of pitch me on it, you know, with no cost up front, but then they're like, yeah, we're not going to do it. So I don't know. And then I've had other people pitch me like, hey, we can do your book on tape or audiobook for you. And then they tell me the price. I basically say, yeah, screw you. I'm not going to pay you that. But So yeah, I published it through independently through a small press called Atmosphere Press. Mm. So it doesn't come with the deal. I've not, you know, I've looked into it. I know that everybody says that you should have an audiobook. I think there's only like 7% of all books are consumed in audiobook form. Wow. So
if you could get 190 star for free to read it for you, like, you know, like 190s just icon.
All right.
Who would you get to read it? I mean, it'd be pretty cool, you know, up in Chicago. If you got Mike, if you got, you know, Jordan to read it for you, that would be pretty cool.
I guess it'd be appropriate. You know, I've joked about this because this is where I'm at and how we think. I'd probably stand outside of Johnny Cusack's house with a, you know,
Would? Okay.
What do you call it? The boom box.
Yeah.
90s playlist, though. But I don't know if he's ever done any audiobooks. I mean, I've heard audiobooks from like Brad.
Well, you wouldn't know it, though. You would know, like, if I heard John Q, like, if they were like, oh, hey, this great book, 90 Days in the 90s. I want you to hear it, and then they turned it on without telling me who was reading it, and it was John Cusack. I'd be like, for real? Yeah. John Cusack's reading this book?
Well, I mean, he was in High Fidelity, and the movie version took place in Chicago.
Well, Gross Point Blank, I mean, that's another one.
From here, yeah. I mean, he's a Midwestern Chicago boy and a Cubs fan and all that fun stuff. So, yeah, I guess that would seem appropriate, but I don't know, there's probably a... probably other people too. Maybe Janine Garofalo, since the main character is a woman.
That's a good one. That's a real good one. So I've talked about this, and hopefully, you know, you're born and raised, right? Chicago. So, like, you know the Chicago stuff, or where are you from?
I've lived here more than half my life now.
Okay, so then you're a Chicagoan, then, all right?
Yeah, basically, though. I've lived here long enough that I am, for sure. And, you know,
Is it finding words that I say that I don't think deep dish pizza is actually pizza?
I don't know. See, I grew up on the East Coast, and I prefer East Coast pizza.
Oh, you do? But okay.
Chicago style is just different. I mean,
it's bread.
I know some people love the baby back ribs, and they would say, like, well, if I want ribs, I don't want spare ribs, which are beef.
Yeah.
But I don't know if people love spare ribs and think they're awesome on the grill. So I don't know. I mean, it's, some people think it's an affront to pizza to have to eat it with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
But there's only certain kind of restaurants that make it that way that you couldn't eat Blue Malnati's by hand. I guess you could, but it's going to be, the sauce can be halfway down your arm.
Yeah.
At Giordano's, you could pull it off that way. It just depends on the restaurant. But there's all kinds of variants here. And
I've been to Chicago one time in my life when I worked at a radio station. We were the official home of the Orlando Rage in the XFL back in the day. And you guys had the, what was the name of the team they had? It was like a mob type theme for Chicago.
I can't remember.
But so we went up there and
attention to extreme football or whatever they call it these days. Yeah.
But that was the first airplane flight. The first airplane ride flight that I've ever taken in my life was to O'Hare. And my God, it was the worst experience of my life because they had us circling around that airport for about 30 minutes longer than what we should have been. And I was getting sick. I almost threw up all over the place. It was bad. Yeah, I live. But then, I went to the Fields Museum. I will say this. You guys do have the best hot dogs, though. I got a Chicago dog in front of the Fields Museum right before we went into Soldier Field that day. And it was a great time.
Yeah, so you like the hot dog, all that stuff on top?
Yeah, I loved it. And I also went to a White Castle that had two armed guards in front of it, so I don't think I was in the best neighborhood at that time.
Yeah, well we only have a couple White Castle here. I don't particularly like it, but who knows? Could have been just what was happening that day, but...
Yeah. All right, Andy, 90 days in the 90s. I really enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully you liked it. And I don't know. Maybe you were just like, man, I can't wait for this guy to get done with this. This is horrible.
Oh, this is cool.
But 90 Days in the 90s, where can my audience check it out?
Yeah, if you want to go to 90daysandthenineties.com, that's the website. You check out the book there. Obviously, you can check it out on Amazon. Yeah, I've been in a couple papers and blogs and podcasts and stuff. But yeah, just look, it's just out on the internet like everything else is these days.
Granny loves getting banned. He said, ask him about beefs. What is beefs?
You mean Italian beefs or?
Know. I mean, I don't know. I probably shouldn't even ask that. I don't know. Anyways, Andy, thank you so much, my friend. I would love to have you on again. Italian beefs. That's what he was asking about.
Yeah, Italian beefs. There's Al's. There's a bunch of different Chicago style pizza restaurants that'll have their slightly diversion. But I mean, Italian beef is Italian beef. It's kind of like a kosher hot dog. Like, it kind of tastes like you'd expect it to be. I would say that you want to get messy, definitely have an Italian beef sandwich. And it's definitely an experience for sure. It's good stuff.
See, I only went to all the touristy areas. I went to the Navy Pier, too. I felt like a big tourist. Being from the Orlando area, I felt I was like, man, this is weird. I feel like a tourist for the first time, because I live in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. Were you wearing your Mickey Mouse ears hat?
No, because I didn't want to look like a complete mark. I didn't want somebody to take advantage of me walking around the Navy Pier and be like, yeah, let's rob this dude with the Mickey ears on. That would be like the worst thing in the world. But Andy, man, I'm going to check. Hey, so if I buy the book and everything, will you sign it so I can because I try to collect guests. Books and everything. Sure. All right. I'm going to definitely do that, Andy. I hope you have a wonderful night, and thank you once again for coming on the show.
Yeah, good talking to you.
All right, Andy. I'll talk to you later. All right, guys, going to get out of here. I can't thank him enough for coming on the show. Andy Fry, check it out. Get his book. He must have hated the interview because I was like, hey, I'm going to buy the book. You can sign it. He didn't say, oh, you know what, Tuttle? You know what? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Tuttle. Buy the book. I'll sign it, bitch. All right, I'm getting out of here, guys. I want to thank everybody that tuned in to tonight's show. Hopefully you guys stay safe, and I will talk to you tomorrow.